I guess I have to do an opening thing now, don't I?
You have to do it twice today.
Oh, God.
Well, that was the do you want one of us to do it?
Oh, true. You want, yeah.
Oh.
We could do, yeah. Somebody else want to do the opener?
Are we rolling? Or are we letting fate decide?
That's fine. I'm used to it because it happens once every so often anyways. Or I could just do it if you want.
You're the most emotionally prepared.
Yeah, I'm like, I can do this. I can do this. I know how to do these things. I don't know where we're going to roll dice at because we don't have...
I just pulled up a D&D all right, dice all right. roller.
All right, Tony.
Want. Are we... All right, whose numbers are what?
I'm a two. I'm two.
So you're going to roll a D4?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to be a three.
I'll be four.
Then I'll be one, I guess.
All right.
All right. All right.
And it is... Two.
Yeah, I win.
Yay.
All right. So do we have an exact script for this or am I just kind of winging it? Okay, awesome. Welcome to Rules as Written, where we try to break the game. In this case, I think we're doing D&D 5th edition rules. And our topic today is how the character of Drizzt breaks the game. This is Bethany and I am here as the DM that I think... much of it is in spite of. So, welcome. So, so you guys introducing yourselves?
Nah.
Nah?
They should know who we are.
Otherwise, I will introduce you and I will give you adjectives.
No, it's fine. I got next.
Okay.
This is Tony. I've become a big fan of the Drizzt books in general, and I am excited to discuss how Drizzt breaks everything.
This is Joshua C. McMahon. I've heard a lot about Drizzt from Tony. I have not read the books. I'm very curious.
And this is Rachel, and I want to hear what adjectives Bethany wants to give me.
I was going to say it's the inimitable Rachel.
Yes. Ooh. But I don't know anything really about the Drizzt books. I have seen Drizzt a bit in the Sword Coast Legends game, but otherwise... A little bit clueless on him and how he works. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So when we were playing Neverwinter, some of the NPCs kept calling him Drizzt, and it made Tony want to go and, like, smash something.
Right. So the name is spelled D-R-I-Z-Z-T. There's no other I.
Drizzt.
I thought there was an apostrophe after the second
yeah,
Z.
Yeah, I think it's apostrophe Z-T.
No, it's actually not. The apostrophe's in his last name, though.
Oh, that's right. Drizzt Doordon.
Yes. That.
Yep.
Yes.
That one.
Obviously not a human name.
There's somebody spiteful working at Wizards of the Coast.
No, he's not...
Who just makes these names impossible.
So, Tony, tell him a little bit about R.A. Salvatore, who we met at a convention.
Yeah, actually, we did get a chance to meet him. He's a really nice guy. And one thing I actually really liked about him, talking to him a little bit, reading the books, I get the sense that he just... He seems in love with his own character. Just, he talks about how great Drizzt is and how fast he is and this and that throughout the entire series that I've read. And going to meet him and hearing him talk for a bit, yeah, he loves his character. He seems completely enamored by him.
He's a fanboy of his own work, which I think is kind of great that he writes the books because he loves writing them, not because he's doing it to cash a paycheck.
Though he did comment that, if he was really given the option, he's not sure he would have actually named him Drizzt Doordon.
Apparently the name just kind of like came to him and he's like, yeah, that'd be a cool name. I don't know how to spell it. And of course he pronounces it a little bit differently because of his accent, which I didn't know about until we met him. Tony, I would like you to do your impression of how he introduces himself.
I'm not going
to
do an impression
please,
of a Boston accent.
No. You did it earlier. It was great.
Oh,
please.
No. Boston?
Well, of course he's Bob.
Bob?
Bob Salvatore.
Oh, boy.
And I'm done.
I'm actually really happy I went into this knowing nothing,
right?
Because this is going to be quite the roller coaster ride.
That was part of the reason we thought to bring it up, because Bethany and I have both read some of the books, and we can present some of the cases we have while you two who don't know about the books can still compare them to the rules and such.
Yeah, you're here as impartial judges, because Tony and I are quite biased on this subject.
So we're like a uninformed jury. We're just hearing it presented.
Or peanut gallery.
And we get to...
Yeah, whatever role you want to do.
I like peanuts.
Yeah. So I guess, Tony, will you give your little brief review of the latest book, which came out, I think, like a month ago?
I actually read the most recent trilogy, the Homecoming trilogy. And just finished Hero. I enjoy the book. More than I thought initially, and that's mainly because this is the first time in any of the Drist books that I've read that Drist isn't basically perfect.
He has a bit of a Superman problem where you're like, and he's good at everything, and he always tries to do the right thing, and it could be a little exhausting.
But just the fact that I do have an emotional kind of reaction to, like, oh, I hate the fact that he does this and he's always so good at this and no one can ever hit him. It still shows that at least, like, okay, I actually like the books. I like the story. I do enjoy it. But to give you an idea of, like, how basically overpowered Drist is, when he is five, quarters are placed onto his hands and
not quarters.
Well, coins are placed on his hands for him to flip, one on each hand, and he is to flip them and catch them, each coin in the same hand. This eventually increases until there are six coins stacked on each hand, and he is dexterous enough to catch all six from the hand that he flipped them in the same hand that he catches them in before they hit the ground. When he is five.
It's totally doable.
Two things. One, writing a character like that, writing a perfect character, is terribly boring writing. I don't understand. I guess he's just a very good author in terms of just the way he uses different words. And
I think how it's compelling is more about, like, what's happening. You're more, like, swept up in the adventure, I guess I'd say. At least for me, then I'm more like, how does Drist feel about this? Well, you know how he feels about this? I'm going to find out in his, like, five-page monologue.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
But I'm like, all right, we'll get past this to where things happen and people get stabbed.
Yeah, characters that aren't flawed, that's just weird. But secondly, the coin trick, flipping the coin trick, I don't know if anyone's actually tried this. It's not terribly difficult to catch coins off of your elbow.
Six coins from his hands flipped in each hand, and he is to catch, basically, the six coins he flipped from his right hand, he has to catch in his right hand. And the six coins stacked on top, flipped in his left hand, he has to catch in his left hand.
I'm a little confused. Maybe I need clarification. Is this the thing where you put them on your elbow?
No,
and then
from his hand.
So you throw coins into the air and then catch them again in the same
hand.
You
flick them like you would flick it with your thumb.
When you, basically, you hold your hand in a fist with your thumb on top,
okay.
And you pop him up in the air and catch him.
I misunderstood. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was five.
That is more difficult.
And this is the first time he attempted this.
Oh.
This was a test of his skill.
Yeah, we're like, okay, so he had, what would you say, he rolled an 18 for his dex and then added 2 for being an elf.
He started off in life with a 20 dex.
You sure he didn't just break the cap on the dex? And it's like no longer 20, it's actually 25 for him. Like,
we're trying to keep this within 5e rules.
Yeah, so Tony, take us through the stats.
Well, also, just to clarify too, are the books written for, I don't say 4 or 5e, but obviously 5e adventure stuff happens in tandem with the books. So is this sort of made for 5e?
So something just to mention briefly, as new editions have come out, apparently Wizards have actually specifically talked to the authors, depending on the event, that something occurs and the rules of the world are changing, and the authors kind of work a little bit within that. At one point, all the authors were told that now basically 100 years passed in the realm. So they need to start writing from that perspective onward, because 4th edition was going to come out, and then there was another event within the books called The Sundering, in which was going to occur and change magic again, and that's about 5th edition, give or take, would come out. So the authors actually do work with Wizards of the Coast. While they don't necessarily stat their characters as if it's based off the rules, there's still a correlation to when the different editions come out and how the books are going time-wise.
Okay.
Though R.A. Salvatore did say, I read the 5th edition rules. I don't actually use them myself.
He also might have asked us not to mention that to Wizards
of the Coast. He's like, shh, don't tell them. I've been using my own rules, which he just released his own rule book last year.
Ooh.
Yeah, he has a whole separate magic system that's based on, like, spell gems, I think.
That's for a different book that he read, yeah.
That's that one you had on your counter?
Yeah, so that's what he's running for his home campaigns, which he's doing with, like, friends and family.
Is that for 5e, or is that for 4E or?
It's a whole different system. It's actually not with D&D.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of similarities. It's definitely the same sort of fantasy world, but it's...
Same feeling.
Different. Yeah, but definitely very different rules.
They're both pasta, but one's spicy and one's not.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Are you hungry, Rachel?
I'm always hungry. You should know that.
You're like, let's get a food metaphor going. So I just thought that was interesting. So he definitely doesn't, like, build his characters into the rule set and then, you know... take it from there. For one thing, these characters have been around through multiple editions.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, through second edition.
Okay. I figured it wasn't totally built off of the current rule set, but I knew things lined up, and not having read or know anything about the books, I was just curious.
Yeah, so I realize we've sort of talked around what Drizzt is like. Tony, do you want to kind of, like, I guess, sort of elaborate on that a little bit? Just sort of on his overall persona and abilities and such?
So essentially, for anyone who doesn't know, also, Drizzt is a drow elf, born in the city of Menzoberranzan, and was trained initially to be a soldier there. He's good. He is a good person in a city filled with evil.
He was born good, is the understanding.
He was always good. As he would state it, he can't deny what is in his heart.
You're not cheesy at all.
That is a common phrase said throughout the books, just so you know.
Oh boy.
For a while, he actually just left the city and lived in just the wilds of the Underdark before eventually being trained by a ranger as he went to the surface, since he knew the surface was probably the only place that his people wouldn't hunt him. And from then on, essentially, he's been considered just the ranger. To this day, even. Though, stat-wise, that doesn't actually make sense.
So, that's sort of an overview on what he's like. And he's supposed to be very sympathetic and caring and very noble and looking at, like, oh, we should avoid war because think of the repercussions, you know, years down the road because he's an elf and he has a long life, so he's a very long-range view of everything.
Yeah.
Also, he's supposed to be incredibly optimistic about everyone and everything.
Kind of like, well, I know orcs like to murder people, but, you know, what if there's good in them? Everyone's like, no, they're orcs. Like,
they're orcs.
This is what they do. And he's like, but really, can't they rise above that? And,
no.
Well, I don't want to spoil.
It's because he did.
I don't want to spoil how that works out.
He sees this sympathy because he's part of a culture that is considered completely evil, and yet he got out of there. That's mainly why. So that's a bit onto his character.
That'd be... I'm really curious about these books now, because that is tough.
You should check them out.
It either works or it either doesn't. I mean, it's... Ooh,
honestly,
ooh.
My favorite Drizzt books are the ones where lots of interesting things happen, and Drizzt is just sort of there.
Where it's gotten to the point where he's not even the main character anymore. He's just, like, talked about.
So he actually wasn't originally...
He was a supporting character who got elevated to a main character after his popularity rose.
Wow.
Yeah, he was originally just a Wolfgar, who I think we'd like to do an episode about at some point, who is a barbarian, was supposed to be the main character because that's what they were looking for the first book from R.A. Salvatore. Because they're like, people like blonde, big, burly men as their heroes.
Ugh.
So he added Drizzt sort of to be like, well, here's like a guy who'll be in his party.
Yeah, they actually have their own adventuring party. They are known as the Companions. There's five of them. Drizzt Duordan, Wolfgar, Brunor Battlehammer, Caddy Bree, and Regis.
Okay.
And they're all pretty overpowered, having several of them, you know, come back from the dead and such sort of things.
I just figured we'd talk about Drizzt since he is the most popular of the group.
And the most broken, I guess we'd say. Or rather, the one who breaks the game the most.
All right. So what's some of the stuff that he does in the books that would make him a terrible character to play with?
When somebody shows up, they're like, I've got this really cool character. I totally okayed with this with the DM. Let me tell you about his magic items.
Yeah, ignoring his stats for now. Going on to his magical items. One of the first ones that he has is his scimitar known as Twinkle.
Okay.
It's a very macho sword, okay?
it's very, very impressive. So a lot of the stats that I got are based off of 3.5 edition. So kind of tweaking it a little bit to make sense in 5th edition is kind of what we're looking at. Essentially, Twinkle is a defender. A defender is a +3 weapon but you can essentially change any or all of that bonus to your AC instead throughout your turn, according to 5e rules. So starting with that alone, that is an item that requires attunement, and he uses this often to essentially just avoid attacks.
Which is basically, we get the impression in the books that he almost never gets hit, but when he does get hit, he basically gets trashed. Which kind of makes sense. He's very much a dex-based character.
His other weapon, another scimitar known as Icing Death, is essentially a Frostbrand sword. What makes this one really, really special, though, is a regular Frostbrand adds frost damage to your attacks, you get resistance to fire damage, and you can extinguish non-magical flames. This is essentially a +3 weapon, and can extinguish, at least partially, magical flames. In the books, at one point, he goes up against a demon known as Ertu, a Balor. It's a CR-19 creature in the monster manual, by the way.
Balors are no joke.
Yeah. The Balor creates a wall of flame, and he's able to partially extinguish it with Icing Death.
Which is just not something you'd be able to do in the
No. It's a magical fire.
I want that, Beth.
Yeah, you're like, can I'm sorry, I'm not offering any of these items in my game.
So that's another weapon that would require attunement. So he's going to break that, by the way, if you haven't figured that part out.
How many items does he have total, just to placate my curiosity?
So he's had a bunch of different items, but he essentially has...
Like 9?
8.
Oh my goodness. 9.
No, I'm sorry, he has 10. 10 magical items. Not all of them require attunement, just most of them.
Just most of them. And we have how many slots?
Yeah, 3.
You get 3 attunement slots.
How do you get an extra attunement?
You don't.
Here's an item, actually, that doesn't exist in 5e right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be Bracers of the Blinding Strike. So to give you a quick story on this, they're like bracelets, and they were given to him for winning a fight. However, when he put the bracelets on, he's already so fast with his swords that it made him too fast, and he could not actually control his movements. So he switched them to anklets.
He's so fast.
He's just so fast that it obviously could not be controlled. In terms of old 3-5 rules, these provided him a +6 to his AC and gave him increase in attack and all that.
I want them.
Essentially, the closest thing I can come up with this is that these are anklets that create a constant field of haste.
So that
would mean is he gets double speed, advantage on dex saving throws, an extra attack, or an extra action in general, and a +2 to his AC.
So Bethany, I'm gonna be getting rid of this armor.
Yeah, you're like, forget this armor
that I don't need. So I'd really like some of these bracers.
So that you could just you could pull an Uthal and just do all the attacks every single turn.
Heck yeah!
Yeah, I second this. Yeah. I would also like a magical bracers of break the game. Yeah,
can we even like split it? I mean,
you just want one a piece and you sort of share it.
Yeah, we like share it.
Oh no! That would not be good because then you'd like, especially if you wore them as anklets, you'd like hobble.
1 foot would be moving really quickly.
I'd be like, okay, you should make a 3-legged race check. What would that be? Dexterity?
That's okay. We got advantage on dex saving throws. We're good now.
Oh my goodness.
So that's just one item there.
That's just one of his completely overpowered items.
Yeah. So let's talk about the armor, Tony, since Rachel brought up her armor.
Well, he has mithril chainmail. In old editions, essentially, it was a +4 mithril chainmail, but since that doesn't exist in 5e, we can tweak it down to a +3 chainmail, which alone would give him an AC of 19. Just that. Not including the anklets or his ability to turn Twinkle into extra AC. Also, what that means is, because it's mithril, he doesn't take any disadvantage on stealth checks, and it has no strength requirement to use this armor.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, one thing I have to say, this has all kind of been pulled from 3-5, you said, right?
As that was the last official stats on him.
From Wizards.
So these ACs, these numbers are coming from a 3-5 rule set.
Tony's giving you his take on a conversion. So the +3 is what would be the 5th edition conversion for that.
Right. And I can tell that. That's fine. That makes sense to me. The only other thing I wanted to say about the, about AC and older editions is that you could get it stupid high.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And whereas in 5e, I think having high ACs past 20 just to kind of stop being a thing.
There's a few, but very rare.
Yeah, whereas ACs of like 25, 30, you could kind of get a hold of fairly easily in older versions.
Yeah, so Rachel, in our 3.5 campaign, what was the AC for my sorcerer?
9?
Nine.
I don't know.
It was really, really bad.
It was abominable. And you had like 12 hit points.
I eventually worked up to an 11, I think.
But you also only had like 12 hit points.
I don't know how that character stayed alive.
Very carefully.
It's rather amazing.
Yeah.
So I guess for a 5e version though, this is extra broken simply because these items give crazy AC for a game.
Everything's giving AC bonuses.
So just to comment really quickly, of the items I've mentioned, he is still actually within the confines of the rules of attunement for 5e.
Yeah.
Because armor usually doesn't require attunement unless there's an additional ability it can do.
Yeah, so at this point you're saying he just has a really, really generous DM.
Really generous.
But then I found out about a very special shirt that apparently goes with this armor. It's called Adnan Silk Shirt. It essentially provides a +5 to his AC. It also has a magical force that can protect vital areas of the wearer more effectively. And when a critical hit or sneak attack would be scored, there's a 75% chance that it is negated and just damage is rolled normally.
That's broken.
There is no equivalent thing to this in 5e that I can come up with.
That is just broken.
Is that attunement?
Yeah, that would require attunement, I'm pretty sure. But anything that would reduce a sneak attack by 75% is just crazy.
So that's double resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Actually, it's not that it would reduce it. The sneak attack is negated.
Right, it's the chance. I mean, the chance to reduce it is so high.
So the 5% chance you have to crit? Well, for sneak... For,
oh, add 7... 25% chance to actually get that crit on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's disgusting. That's just broken.
Think how awful that would be where you'd be like, I rolled it at 20. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, now roll a d4 and get a 4.
Yeah, good luck.
And if you don't get a 4, it doesn't work. The only thing that would help with is with rogues who always get sneak attack kind of stuff if they're flanking. Is
if
that
they
right?
have advantage.
Okay, yeah, with advantage.
Or an ally within 5 feet.
So if a whole party of rogues went to stab at him, then that 25% chance would be better.
So Twinkle also seems to have an added effect that he can't be snuck up on.
Yeah, he can't be surprised.
So it's like a weapon of warning.
But because it's not that he can't be surprised, because they would still get advantage in some of the cases where they have, like if your enemy is alone and you're the only one attacking him, you get the advantage. If you have like pack tactics, that's advantage.
That would actually work.
So there's still ways to get around it, because it's not that you're surprising him, you are advantaging attacking him.
This is all not even going into his class ability.
Yeah, so you realize, guys, we've gone past... Here's how Drist is broken to how could we murder Drist? You realize we've made this transition.
We're breaking Drist.
Yes.
No, don't
That's
worry.
What we do. We break things.
We might have to rechange.
His stuff gets better.
All right. Yeah, Tony's building up to some of his other items.
Tony, I get the sense that you don't like the way this is put together. I can't see why.
I actually think he's...
I think it's jealous.
Unbelievably overpowered, and I find it hilarious.
Uthal wants to find him.
You know, I think it's because Tony knows he plays an overpowered character in my game. We all know it. It's okay.
What?
We accept it.
Hey, I died.
But he's like, hey, I'm not at that same level of ridiculously overpowered. Like, whoa.
Yeah, you know? I only have, like...
A 21 AC.
Plate mail +1, and a floating shield, and a vorpal sword. Yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah, that's it. Only those three things. Honestly, Tony, I kind of thought you'd be dead by now, so...
We tried.
Not you, your character.
So you wanted to let him go with a bang, basically? Like, here's all the stuff. Good luck.
Also, I looked at the odds of him rolling as many nat 20s as he has. They're really... It was not likely that he would have decapitated...
Hey, I've killed 3 people with those nat 20s.
And one of them, you couldn't decapitate, so you just did a massive ton of damage.
Massive damage.
What is it? 8d6?
Oh, no. I actually decapitated 3 different people... That was the other 2 that 20s that I rolled that I couldn't decapitate.
So any DMs out there, be very careful about Vorpal Swords. It seems like it won't be a big deal, but it can totally ruin a lot of things for your plans.
I have a great monologue prepared. Vorpal Sword. Like, shink! Well.
Or even accidental Vorpal Sword. Like, well, I just meant to sort of nick him, but what, at 20, what can, nothing you can do.
Make sure you take him alive. Yeah, well, about that.
Well, I mean, it's really hard
I was
to
trying to hold back.
Yeah, until I cut their head off.
So, then going into Driss's ranged capabilities. He has a bow called Talmaril the Heartseeker. It's essentially a +3 elven bow that converts any arrows fired from it into a bolt of lightning.
Don't the bolts of lightning, didn't I fire one of those yesterday's campaign? Isn't that like 68 damage?
Yeah.
It's quite a bit. I would take it in this case as if you take the damage from the arrow and maybe like 2d6 from the lightning.
It's more like a lightning arrow than a bolt of lightning, right?
Yeah. It doesn't actually pass through a bunch of individuals. It seems to only hit one and it would stop there. But paired with this is a magical quiver called the Quiver of Anariel, which provides +1 alchemical arrows, which I'm not sure what alchemical arrows are, to be honest with you, but they're never ending. He has a never ending supply of arrows from this quiver because it consistently regenerates it.
So, wait, Rachel, what does that sigh mean?
I want a quiver of javelins like that. I just want to wreak havoc now.
You're like, I just want to watch the world burn with never-ending javelins.
She's like, why does she have so many javelins?
For your lives. Yeah, because you guys are dangerous enough as it is.
Mm-hmm. Change those to spears and I'm fine.
I'm blown away. This is okay. An appropriate metaphor I'm going to make right now is basically like trying to buy a gaming computer. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, of course it's impressive if you spend all of the money on it and get the best parts. Like, how can it not fail?
And there's more.
So Drist is kind of like Superman without kryptonite, unless his kryptonite is feelings.
Unless he's emotional that day, yeah. that's the only way you'll get to him.
And that actually happens quite a bit.
Yeah, people are like, but we're trying. Oh, okay.
So what you're saying is sticks and stones will miss his bones, but words will cripple him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. Now, despite giving it a hard time, we want to recommend the Drizzt series, starting with Homeland. This is the first book in a trilogy taking place before the Icewind Dale trilogy, which really kicked off the whole thing, but apparently everyone fell in love with Drizzt, so we think you should start here, because it goes further into the details of Drizzt's story and how he became to be the overpowered and feelings-driven drow he is. I can't speak personally on the series yet, as I haven't read it, but I may just take up Tony and Bethany's offer to borrow it from them. Unfortunately, that's not something you are able to do, dear listener, so I encourage you to check out the book on Amazon by clicking the link in the show notes or by going to rulesaswritten.club/homeland. That's H-O-M-E-L-A-N-D. And by doing so, help to support the show, which really helps us. Thanks again for our sponsor, Amazon, and for R.A. Salvatore for writing an excellent series.
You also have to mention his poafwi.
Yes, his Cloak of Elvenkind. I actually wasn't even sure if he still had it, but essentially it allows him advantage on stealth checks.
But it's specifically a drow-crafted item.
That he can use on the surface, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Driss, a drow who all their race would actually be affected by sunlight, just stayed on the surface long enough to not be affected by it anymore.
All right.
So no disadvantage on that.
There's just nothing wrong with him, essentially. It's just been written to where it's not possible.
No. There's more.
He has horrible acne.
No, he's actually supposed to be really beautiful.
He's supposed to be incredibly beautiful because he's a drow elf.
I know.
So
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah, you're like trying to like make us feel better about ourselves. Like, well, no. Like, it's okay to not be perfect. Like, no.
He doesn't put things back in the fridge. I don't know.
No.
He's a complete freak and he has 3 nipples.
What fridge?
Ooh, that would be weird.
He just puts it near icing death. It's fine. That's cold enough.
The fridge or the nipples?
Yeah, I'm about to say, hold on, Josh. Which one's weird?
I think I latched onto the... I don't know what the other one was because I latched onto the nipple.
The other one was put things away in the fridge. We're saying the fridge.
I pictured the 3 nipples, but like they all look really good. Like it's like, oh no, that's all like quality nipple, but it's just there's a third one, and it's like, oh, what is that?
Who am I to judge? Brow. They're weird anyways.
You poke at it and it's like, do you feel this? He's like, yes, stop
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
Yes. Yes, they all have nerves. Get out of here.
It's functioning.
Oh, oh God.
I love you guys, but sometimes.
And our sponsor for today is Drow Milk.
Oh. Oh. No, 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 no. Let's not.
So, magic items, huh? Eh?
So, to finish off the list, he now, this is a more recent one, but he acquired a whistle that allows him to summon a unicorn named Andahar as if it's like the summon steed spell. Because he needs a mount, you know.
Doesn't he have a tiger? Or a panther?
Yeah, that's the final one I was getting to.
Yeah, this is the, okay. The big one. The one that breaks everything.
Because nothing else did.
So this is a figurine of wondrous power. Of course, there's no figurine like this in the Dungeon Master Guide for 5e.
Hey, you could get a goat, right?
Or a lion.
But a goat.
Or a dog.
But not a panther.
Like, I know Ash is going to want one of these.
Hell yeah.
So this panther's name is Guinevar. It is a creature from the astral plane whose... all of its attacks are considered magical and basically acts completely independent of him. So he essentially gets all the benefits of having the ranger and animal companion class without actually having to go out and acquire an animal companion. And he can still go down the hunter route.
Okay. So for reference, in the book, you can get a griffin, a fly, a lion, a goat.
A fly? Wait, like a fly? Like a bug fly?
Yes, like a giant fly.
Oh, a giant fly. Okay, I was like, how is this helpful?
Yeah, a giant fly. Yeah.
Lions.
An elephant, a steed, a dog, an owl, or a raven. Which I think is what I had, Rachel, right, at one point?
Yes, I believe you did have one.
In your game? Yeah, and I was like, that was cool.
Giant flies are a thing? Because that sounds terrifying.
There's a picture.
They are.
I don't know if you've seen the movie of, what was it, The Fly? But
The Fly.
It's scary.
Yeah, there's a picture in the Dungeon Master's Guide of the giant fly statue or figurine.
Page 169.
Yeah. For those of you who are reading along.
Be prepared.
Ding! Turn to the next
I'm
page.
I'm sure it will be terrifying.
Honestly, it's the goat I was most excited about because you can get a goat of traveling, which becomes a giant goat that you can use as a riding horse. Mm-hmm. And that just really speaks to me. Because also you get three goats. You get a set of goats. You could also get a goat of terror.
What is a terror goat?
He becomes a giant goat for 3 hours, and you can remove its horns and use them as weapons.
Oh, God.
Like a plus.
But it can't attack.
No, but.
That's weird.
No, but he's terrifying. He radiates an aura of terror.
I'm sure he'll also chew clothes and stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah,
so.
He just terrifies everyone. They have to make a wisdom saving throw or be frightened of this giant goat.
So weird.
Now you guys know what you've been missing.
Ash wants them.
Yeah, you're like, please, can I have one?
You wouldn't let me take the other goats.
The third goat is just a giant goat.
Just a giant.
But goat of terror.
Goat of terror.
So anyways, Guinevar was not a goat, but is a panther.
Guinevar is not a goat. Guinevar is a panther that is actually faster than Drist. Mm-hmm. And of course, having magical claws and teeth can just tear across most enemies. And usually will pin them as Drist can finish them off.
Are you going to mention the Elder Brain?
Oh, God.
Please tell the story of the Elder Brain briefly.
Oh, no.
So, in one of the early books, Drist has been captured by Mind Flayers, and Guinevar, who realizes this, is able to cling to a Mind Flayer that came to observe her in the Astral Plane, ride the Mind Flayer back to the Material Plane... in which she immediately killed the Mind Flayer and its ally, then rushed over and literally just dived into the Elder Brain. And it's basically described as just flesh and bits and blood all over the place. And she leaps out as, like, Drist comes to his senses and then dives back in.
Well, explain why Drist was there, Tony.
Well, he was there to massage the Elder Brain.
Because he had such dexterous fingers.
whoa, wait.
My brains hurt.
Brains, wait, hang on.
I need a massage.
You need a brain massage.
Brains don't have nerves or muscles. I don't.
Elder brains are special.
Elder brains are
special. They're special.
What is an elder brain?
All right, I'll mention that quickly. An elder brain is essentially all of the brains from the Mind Flayer colonies to ever have existed in one form. It basically gets absorbed into this single entity.
So it's a singularity of sorts.
It is, by the way, a giant brain.
Okay. There's no words to describe how
weird. Josh, Google elder brain, and that'll give you some great pictures. They have, like, tentacles.
But in terms of what happened, I can't even, these are cool pictures.
They're neat, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's really good. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, because that's really, that's some good art. They're huge.
They're huge. Yeah.
No, the panther dived into it. There was had more than enough room for the panther to be inside it.
Yep.
So that's Guinevere, by the way.
So this is a lot like old-style cartoons like He-Man, where everyone always, the bad guy loses, the good guy wins, and there's no problems, and everyone laughs as the episode ends.
There's occasionally problems in the books, but Drist is always, always wins.
Sometimes things go really badly for a while.
Well, that's why it's a series.
Yeah, exactly. So Guinevere's awesome. I like Guinevere way better than Drist. She just focuses on getting the job done. I respect her.
I'm sorry. I still love the spot of Guinevere rode a mind flare back to the material plane.
That is pretty,
She actually, right? To be more specific, she rode its astral projection back to the material plane.
Can you do that?
She can.
Okay. Okay. Never mind.
Because she's an astral creature, right? So she just...
She is an astral creature, so she can actually influence astral bodies, essentially.
So in that specific instance, that was the Mind Flayer using astral projection...
To observe her.
Not actually being on the astral plane.
It was not physically on the plane. Mm-hmm. So when she went to attack him, he was trying to get back to his body.
Can you attack with astral projection?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Not that I'm aware of.
But now you want to try, right?
I mean, now I'm curious. It just sounds like... So I'm not sure exactly what you had been planning for the rest of your detailed attack into these books, but is this a book you would recommend?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoy these books. The adventures they go on is actually really cool.
Well, and afterwards, I wasn't able to read the latest three books, or I could have, but since we're in Out of the Abyss right now, there are some distinct spoilers for the campaign, Josh. Apparently Tony says we're getting up to one of those points soon.
There is one specific spoiler, which is who did it?
Oh.
And that's the biggest one.
Who unleashed the demons?
And you guys are actually getting to the point where you can find that out. And that's why I'm not mentioning that.
So Tony's been telling me about the books, but in really cryptic roundabout ways, that thing where the person did the stuff. Oh, it made me so mad.
There's no better conversation you can have than with a DM whose campaign you're in. And he's like, I've got some really cool stuff planned where events happen and then you'll be surprised.
Yeah. And you're like,
that's the best.
So I love that you guys aren't in mine, because then I can be like, oh, I made this thing and it's really cool.
Yeah. We're like, all right, let me tell you about what I'm doing with mine cards.
Yeah. This should come out after the mine card incident, so we can do it.
Yes, I know. Otherwise I wouldn't have mentioned it.
This should come out after.
So I will say that having read quite a few of the Drist books, when I was building my character for Tony's campaign, I wanted to build a drow ranger, and I realized I was in danger of accidentally building female Drist, and that would not be fair to the other players. For one thing, I'd be even more obnoxious than I am now, just
possible?
In a different way.
Because you must follow what's in your heart.
Is that not worse than I think everybody's beneath me? I think it's better to be condescending than to be like, follow your dreams.
I think having you as a drow tell me to follow my dreams with sincerity would make my head explode.
Right, exactly. You'd be like, no, I'm sorry, get out.
I would be like the elder brain with a panther in it. It would just, that would be what would happen. We'd have a whole mess to clean up.
So when I was building Aura, I was like, okay, well, it makes sense to play a drow in this campaign because that's sort of where we're starting out and it'll give some advantages, but I don't want to play Drist because no one's going to like that. And I don't want to be Drist because it just sounds exhausting having to be so sincere all the time.
You'd rather be awful.
I'd rather be my poor... My she's not bad. She's just broken a little bit.
So, you want to go ahead and mention the different classes you've taken?
Oh, okay. So, for building Aura, who was originally going to be a ranger, I was like, yeah, I'll play a ranger in 5th edition. It's going to be awesome at low levels. I'll get all these abilities that will keep us from, getting lost and wandering off to our deaths, which was a major concern of mine. It really was. Or starving, mm-hmm. because we couldn't find food.
Yeah, the Underdark is not a friendly place.
It is a terrible place. It's terrible. But I call it home. So I was like, all right, I'm going to build this. And then I looked at higher level Rangers of 5th edition, and it kind of just doesn't go anywhere. Oh, this is why nobody plays Rangers, because they're lame. That's okay. I will focus on stabbing things, which rangers are good at to start, and then I will just do a class in rogue, and then I'll do some levels in fighter. Oh no, I'm accidentally building Drist with my stats.
Yeah, to mention a little bit on what Driss's old classes were, he has multiple levels in fighter, a few levels in ranger, and one or two levels in barbarian.
Whoa.
Because he lived in the wilds with just Gwenivar for
And actually
a
mentions
while.
He does go into a rage.
So he is a 20-level character.
That's what I would put him at this point.
How
the
could
last
he not
stats be? That they had him was a level 16 to 17 character.
Oh my goodness, he wasn't even level 20 to do all that stuff?
Yes.
Easy, it's okay.
That's what I said.
This is
those okay. exact words.
It comes down to genetics at this point. It's like knowledge. When I rolled up knowledge, because I'm glad that we had a chance to do rolled characters mm-hmm. yeah. instead. I think I've crunched the statistics in it, and you're more likely to get a better character instead of doing a point by system, depending on what kind of game you want to run. But it can be very fun to also have a gimped character if you want to make that an interesting narrative decision. But sometimes you get crazy lucky. And with knowledge, who is a sorcerer, he rolled nothing below a 10.
Yeah.
It's all in the pluses.
So that's what happened with Drist. He rolled really well.
It's genetic. yeah, it's just genetic. You can't beat that.
Just to give some quick stats based off 3-5 edition Drist. He has a strength of 13, a dex of 20, a con of 15, an int of 17, wisdom 17, and charisma 14.
I wonder what point by that is.
That's not a that's point by. No.
Yeah, that's called cheating. Cheating.
I'm pretty sure if this was 5th edition, he starts with those stats, and then he just takes feats from there.
Yeah, exactly. So that, because otherwise, you actually cannot dual-wield scimitars.
Mm.
That's another way he's broken. Right, Tony?
Scimitars are actually light weapons, so he would be able to.
Oh, you would be able to. Okay. So the issue is he wouldn't be able to attune to all of these. these
weapons. No. No, he would not.
So he has the world's most permissible DM, where he says, hey, can I have another item? Yeah, sure. Why
Let's
not?
Just throw these out the window.
Take it. You'll never die.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, why we all had the instinct to try to figure out a way to kill him. For spite.
Well, just to see if it's freaking possible. Okay, here we go. I just did it. 3.5 point by system. I can only put his dex at an 18. I cannot put it at a 20.
Add 2 for the dex bonus of elves.
Okay, if he gets just a standard dex plus 2, then this works out for the point by, because the point by doesn't take that into account then. So for this point by, or it's off the cuff, he is a 61 point by character.
That's what standard point by is it? Is it 61?
I believe it's 25.
Oh, so close.
So more than double is what you're trying to tell me.
Yes. Okay. I'm pretty sure. I believe if you want high fantasy, it's 35. I think if you want lower fantasy, it's a little lower. And for 3-5, okay, so for weak, it's 25. For powerful, it's 36.
For powerful, huh?
So 61, would we just see that as, like, godlike?
The only thing I could adjust now is he gets the plus 2 dex because of elf. Does he get any pluses or minuses anywhere else?
In 3-5, I thought he gets a minus.
Is it, like, to con?
To con or strength, I thought.
In that case, he's a 50. If I take one away from con, he's a 59.
That's it?
Well, that's so much better.
That's such a difference.
It's
so.
Minus 2 con. Plus 2 dex, minus 2 con.
Okay, so then I'll put him at a 13 instead of a 15?
No, he has a 15 con.
Oh, so I have to put him at a 17?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, for frickin' sakes. That's 66 then. That's a 66 point by character. That's disgusting.
So we've already determined he has more magical items than he can attune to. His stats have to be rolled or
just no.
Just no.
Just no.
And even if you were to roll them, you'd have to roll almost perfectly.
Yep.
The lowest score he has is a 13.
He cheated. Is whoever his player, yeah. His fictitious player, cheated.
That's ridiculous. I can't even figure that out. Okay.
So does this make you feel better? I know there. Tony said that my drow ranger is a bit overpowered, and now I'm like
she is,
but like a tiny
but not
bit.
Like this.
Not like this. Like, I have 3 nice items, really great items that I'm attuned to, not 10 that I'm attuned to. So, anyways, that's So what do you guys think? Do you, how would you feel if this was a player, that joined the campaign? this was their character.
And they came in with all this.
Yeah, with all this stuff.
So as a player coming in with all this stuff, yeah. And he's the only one.
Yeah.
If we're all playing an OP party, then it can be, that's its own kind of fun. But if he was the only one, then it's like, why are we here, guys? Yeah. Like, what is this? What's the point? Us having a campaign with a whole bunch of level fives and one dude who's a level 15, it's like, okay, this might make for an interesting narrative, but mostly it's just bizarre.
This person rolls through and, like, does all the damage, kills everybody, and then you guys are, like, trotting, like, we're here!
Yeah, everyone will be dead before you get to them.
Yeah. And as a book, as a narrative, I know we've spent most of this episode bashing it, I feel like having a flawless character is not indicative of good writing. I haven't done a lot of good writing, but no one ever sells me on, oh yeah, I've made a perfect character and he overcomes all his obstacles with no problem.
The books do really well. He's incredibly popular.
The books are very, very good.
Mm-hmm. No, people like him though. I just say Tony and I think we are more offended by him because we're DMs.
Ah, okay.
I think that tends to be our issue.
This just wouldn't work.
Quick thing though. I just looked up in the 3.5, yeah. Which book am I in? I'm in the Dungeon Master's Guide. I'm not finding anything that says you're limited to how many items you can be attuned to. However,
you're not.
You can only have up to 12 items based on the locations of where you're wearing them.
Yes. Older editions didn't have attunements. That was one of the things that 5e had.
But the idea is the way he's built now should theoretically line up with 5th edition because the books are supposed to be lining up with the modules. That's kind of how I think we were examining it.
So some of those would have to not be attunement items or he wouldn't be able to use them.
Yeah, basically.
He's still broken.
He's still broken. You take away all his stuff, he's still really broken and really overpowered.
I guess it makes for good writing, though. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the name of the first book?
Homeland?
Homeland. Let me double check that.
I mean, we own them if you want to borrow, like, hard copies, and I have been getting the audiobooks from Audible because I realized now it sounds like I'm plugging Audible. I really enjoy my Audible subscription.
The very first book chronologically is Homeland. The first book that was written actually takes place, is actually the fourth book chronologically.
I thought you said it was a trilogy.
I just read the most recent trilogy.
There's multiple trilogies. Yeah, there's a lot of books.
Okay, I see it here. It's Homeland, The Dark Elf Trilogy, Part 1, Forgotten Realms, The Legend of Drizzt, Book 1.
I really enjoyed it because it's just fun to see how evil the drow are. Like, what are they going to do this time? It's going to be so evil. Because, you know, that's kind of like their specialty. And just to see how over the top it can get. Like, oh, they're going to murder children this time. That's pretty evil. But can they top that in the next book?
Oh, they can.
And they do. Drow are the worst.
I will mention, if you're looking for the first book he ever wrote on it, it's called The Crystal Shard. Mm-hmm. It's the fourth book chronologically in the story of this.
I would read them in the order that the chronology goes, just because it'll make more sense that way. At least that's what we've been trying to do.
Okay. So not in the order they were released, but in the order they're meant to be read.
Yeah, I think so. Because he went back and wrote these special Drizzt books after Drizzt became popular.
Gotcha.
Like, oh, he gets a backstory now. Woo!
A very in-depth backstory.
So the thing we have not mentioned in this is that our characters met Drizzt in Out of the Abyss. I don't know. Do you remember this, Josh?
I remember this vividly. I talked to Guinevere.
Guinevere?
Yeah. But she just kind of gave me a look like, purr.
No, but you still got the impression she actually understood everything you were saying, which she is supposed to.
She gave you the cat look.
Yeah, and just like just shy of a wink and a grin.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good conversation. It was really cool. It was cool to meet Guinevere. And I think you hated Drizzt, is that right? Your character hated Drizzt?
Not hated, just despised. Like, that's all.
Just despised.
I feel like on the ranking of unliking people, despised falls quite a bit ahead of hatred.
Not for drow. Despise is like standard. I mean, really.
like if you're only despised by the drow, that's pretty good in their eyes.
Yeah, exactly. They only despise you. But she did have particular reasons why she would despise Drizzt because basically he's like, growing up, he, you know, went to Melee Magthray, which is where they train their fighters, and he did so well. And then he's like, I can't be with the evil drow, because they did do some evil things, that he just wanders out into the Underdark and lives by himself.
For a decade, by the way.
Yeah, so my character, who's extremely young, basically is like, no, I'm going to change things. Like, I'm going to offer an alternative. You don't have to be evil drow. We're going to fix things, because she's sort of, in her own way, idealistic. So basically, she feels he copped out and just left.
Yeah, and isn't it amazing that your character's not dead in drow society yet?
What do you mean? What are you trying to say?
You're going to change things away from Lolth.
It's going to be great. No, don't worry. It's all going to work out. Nothing bad will happen.
Trust in your heart. That's what you got to do.
No, it's trusting in logic and commerce, actually. She's a capitalist.
It's just, it's simply good business.
But do you feel it in your heart?
I feel it in my wallet, Tony.
Josh, if Ara ever asks you to or tells you to follow your heart or anything like that, you will know she has succumbed to madness.
Oh, okay.
The only answer. Madness.
Actually,
it's the only thing that explains it. You'd be like, oh yeah,
I like
something
that.
Wrong with her, because otherwise, no. So she just kind of felt like Drist was sort of this, I don't know, kind of lame, cheesy character that people thought were so great, but what has he really done? He doesn't care about the drow. He kind of hates drow.
He doesn't quite hate them.
I guess if he blew up with popularity and that's what people asked for, it must be good, right?
Yeah.
If that's what he started writing about.
Yeah, there's a good level of conflict in the books. I think that's what people respond to. So, in summary, I guess you guys agree with what Tony and I thought, which is, since we met this character in the books, we're like, oh my gosh, he's so overpowered.
This is what we're going to have to do. I'm thinking we have homework now.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking I'm going to have to go ahead and get a couple of these books. Give them a read.
Uh-huh.
You said they're on paperback and you can do audiobook as well?
Yeah.
Audiobook format?
Yeah, and okay. I was going to say, and I think the public library has some of the audiobooks too if you do it through the app.
Super. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rachel, you and I will have to go ahead and check these out, take a look and see what we hear and come back with a more informed opinion on what's going on. But based on what you've told us, this seems like an incredibly broken character.
Aren't there like 30 books?
Yeah. No, we're not saying you have to read all the books.
I'm a slow reader.
There's a lot of books.
Yeah.
You may want to pick one of the trilogies or something. That way you get a story thread. But
yeah, and then you can join us in the rant.
What's the newest trilogy called?
It is called Homecoming.
We have them in hardcover if you want to borrow them.
And Homeland is probably something you'd recommend as a starter.
I liked Homeland because
it tells you his origin story.
And just, it's great to enjoy how evil the drow are. They're just so awful.
Excellent.
It's actually very interesting because, of course, drow culture being what it is, for the longest time he mentioned that all anyone talked about was, no, drow are evil, drow are evil, drow are evil. And here he is supposed to make a drow good character. So he's trying to show how that came about.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to take a look at that then. So we'll do a wrap-up.
So how are we doing our wrap-up?
We want to do another roll.
Or we could just have whoever starts it finishes it.
Or
I'm
we
just
could do
saying
a roll.
To minimize on rolls and craziness.
I think we could do rolls and we'll just keep our same numbers.
Okay. So I'm 4.
Okay.
If that's cool
good.
With you guys.
I was 3.
Yeah, Tony's 1 and I'm 2.
Okay. Uh-huh. That's right.
All right. And here's the roll. Number 3.
Woo.
That's
do
me.
It, Josh.
That's me.
That
that's
is
me.
You.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for listening. Come join the club at rulesiswritten.club. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play and tweet to us at rulesiswritten #feedback. We want to encourage everyone to send ideas and topic suggestions for your creative ways to break the game.